Welcome to the official podcast of PHP Architect. Join us to listen to the latest news and tech talk from our conferences, the magazine, and wider PHP community.
Hey, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, and welcome everybody to the 2026 June 17th edition of the PHP Podcast. If you are not in our Discord yet, come to discord.phparc.com and join up in the discussion. Your comments will appear over there on the other side of Holly. I can't quite reach it through the wall. You can see, I'm not in my usual location. I am, for some insane reason, sitting in a harbor in a city called A Coruña in the northwest Spain, in the Galicia region, where they don't quite speak Spanish, they don't quite speak Portuguese, they speak Galician, I guess. And I am on a boat, yo, because it once was a ship that put to sea. No, we're not going to go off the rails right off the bat. But if you guys wanted to harmonize, that would be great.
I think we'd get demonetized if I start singing, so we're just going to not do that.
Oh, come on. That's how you go viral, by digging up trends from 5 years ago. So with that, my delightful co-host.
Thank you. I'm Holly Schilling. I'm back again. Proof yet again that the assassins have failed. So contrary to Sarah's expertise here, I am kind of a casual user of PHP, but I'm glad to be here today to help Sarah host in the show while Eric and John are out. Unfortunately, they still think they're getting the show back at some point, but that's not happening. So
we all pirate radio up here.
You know what? This is a new level of pirate radio when we actually have one of us on a boat. I love this. Like, I'm going to get a puffy shirt for next week, and we're going all in on this.
Christian Slater and pump up the volume and like the van that drove around so he could do his pirate radio broadcasts.
Yes, I know
this
the movie.
This is a deep cut in terms of movies from a couple years ago.
No, I know this movie. So yes, we have to be careful with taking over the podcast from Eric. The FCC might come after us in a different... I think only one of us is actually in the US. So it's your problem, Holly.
You know, the FCC has already been on me enough times for literal broadcast problems. So, no, I do not want that. They have been after me one time you blast a military satellite with like plus 70 dB of power and they get really angry.
You don't have a ham license, do you?
Not ham. No, when I was in the military, I did satellite communications.
Oh, so you were in the military.
It was a mistake. Yes. Let's just say it was a mistake and they were not happy. And, yeah.
Look, carrier wave gonna carrier wave, okay? It's just,
you know,
just
if you just happen. Plug things in wrong enough, eventually everything goes back to the satellite. That's all I can say.
Stream reverse the polarity, because that would be great.
No, you just plug like the modem downlink into the modem uplink and just bypass the modem entirely. Nobody cares. It goes right back up. Everything coming down, just feedback. It's like, you know, that's, you know, if you hold the microphone in front of a speaker, you get that loud squeak. Do that on a satellite. They don't like it.
Weird. Paul, you have volunteered as a person who has spoken up so far. So our first guest, you may know him, you may love him, you may say, who the hell is this guy? It's Paul Reinheimer.
Hello. I guess I should introduce myself in slightly more detail than hello. Me, like Sean and Sarah, are PHP people from a different era or an earlier era, not too long ago, but a few years ago. Sarah's been around the whole time, but you know, Sean and I have stepped back a little bit. I wrote a book about PHP a couple of years ago, maybe 20 years ago, about, you know, using PHP and APIs. And I was thinking, actually, as we were watching the intro video, I don't know if I've ever had an article in PHP Architect. I know I ghost wrote a chapter or two in some books that we published, but I'm not sure if I've ever actually had an article in it. Despite working for PHP Architect for several years.
Convenient that it's ghost written and therefore your name's not on it somewhere. That's convenient.
That's
well, why don't we ask the editor-in-chief of PHP Architect, Rick,
from 20 years ago.
We fill in the year. About 20 years ago, yeah, sounds about right.
I don't remember Paul writing for the magazine, but I do remember lots of ghost writing going on.
Thank you for the credit there, yeah.
you were editor when I wrote the one article I wrote, I think.
I believe so, yeah. Like, sounds right. Like 2005 to 8-ish era. Not quite 8, like probably.
That,
yeah, because Steph did it after I couldn't manage to do that every month anymore.
Yeah. It could have been you. It could have been Steph. I'm not sure. Anyway,
Do we not use include once anymore? Sorry, I'm just reading the chat on the side. Is that not how we do this anymore?
I sure don't.
The include once function, is that not something we use anymore?
I love include once. Why wouldn't I mean, if you're using, we can wait till we get to that. We'll get there in a minute. But like, that's what Composer does. So, which leads us into a great starter for the topic. What have you two been doing lately? You have been historically very tightly involved in PHP and part of the process, but it has been a hot minute. My understanding is that, Paul, you are still doing some PHP stuff, and Sean, you are ranching poutine, I think is what the notes say.
Yeah, that's what,
Yeah, so what are you guys up to?
Let's see. So, I mean, I still write PHP occasionally. We did have I work for a company called WonderProxy, and we do annual security audits, and we have these nice, stern German folks who come and look at all of our code. And I think it was either last year or the year before that we had a major vulnerability that was like, Git blame just said Paul Reinheimer all over it. And sort of in the discussions afterwards, one of the conclusions was maybe we shouldn't let Paul code anymore. Which, you know, hurt on the inside and on the outside. But I still get to write some PHP these days.
Were you using magic quotes? That's the answer we need to know.
Magic. It was not a magic quotes related problem. It was really I just took dollar sign underscore post and stuck it directly to an SQL query. You know, artisanal, like it's 1998. It's the shortest line to production is a proof of concept. And it got there.
Hey, no code. So
magic quotes GPC might have helped you.
Yes, 100%.
No, it wouldn't, because it protects against database injections, not excesses.
What's
it? Hey, no code is more permanent than proof of concept. That's right? The truth we all know.
Yep. So yeah, after I left PHP Architect, oh gosh, all of the lights just went off in my office. This is very helpful. I love smart homes. Oh gosh, they're great.
I am moving into my new apartment, and I have just started throwing all the little smart switches everywhere and building a whole new one up, better than the last one, because I learned a lot of things on my last place.
Nice. I worked for a company doing some graphical stuff. I worked for a company doing, trying to help people cure cancer, writing really boring software. Then I was with FreshBooks, then I was with Stripe, and now I'm full-time on the WonderProxy stuff and have been for like 8 years. It's been great.
Sorry, you don't lead with curing cancer? Like, that's not like you're...
He wasn't successful, so...
Rough.
Oh, that's true. We still have cancer, don't we?
We wrote software for, like, the people administering the largest AIDS and cancer trials in the United States. But it was, like, the most boring software in the world, but they needed good... Yeah. But they needed it?
Good science is boring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, like, and you have to repeat the steps, and every year I had to do the ethics of clinical trial enrollment for... like as a training module, despite the fact that I never enrolled anyone in a clinical trial, nor had I met anyone who had enrolled anyone in a clinical trial. They just like select all the department and made me do it.
You're giving me a throwback here to when I used to work for a medical company. I had to take a bloodborne pathogen certification every year to make sure I knew how to handle that. We were fully remote, and I'm a developer, but I had to be certified for bloodborne pathogen handling. So absolutely understand.
What if there's like this emergency where you have to come in with your USB stick and like, you know, hack the mainframe back into shape, and then one of the lab techs is walking past and he trips and like, oh, whoops, there goes like the T-cell virus or something like that.
My thought was more, what if I have to recover a floppy disk with part of a garbage file that's been thrown into a trash bin? You never know what's going to happen.
You could hack the planet.
It's too late for the training at that point.
Hey, thank you for getting that. I was a little afraid that I didn't know who was going to get that reference. So thank you.
Were you just making a hacker's reference? Hack the planet.
Yes, hackers. Yes, exactly.
Sarah Killer.
I'm a little disappointed you didn't get it first here, Sarah. Sorry.
I didn't get it until you guys said it was a reference. And I'm like, floppy disk into a... Trouble is, you said floppy disk. I was thinking 5 1/4 inch floppies. The floppies, not the hard floppies. That threw me off.
I actually just had to move some of those off my desk because they were in the frame and it was embarrassing.
You did. I was there.
You had 5 1/4 inch floppies on your desk and you moved them?
Well, they were just kind of like hanging out at the bottom. They're in this like nice Tandy disk caddy.
Where else would you have them?
Oh my God, that is
No, they're actually floppy.
Oh my cool, god! Right? But you have like the oh my god! I can feel that case on my fingertips just looking at it.
Just so a thing I've been doing this year is I'll tell you about work stuff after, but I've been hanging out at a local hackerspace called Food Lab in Montreal, and I started going just for like some like mesh networking meetings, like Meshtastic and Meshcore stuff. But just kind of started hanging out with people. And there's kind of like a pretty well-established museum there where we have like a whole bunch of old like vintage machines and stuff that I used to have when I was a kid. And we just got some PDP-11s. So I have the 5 1/4 out for playing with those old machines.
See, if I were actually at home doing this, I would be able to like slide over into my box of old t-shirts and grab my vintage computer festival t-shirts and stuff like that. But Meshtastic, that's something I've been doing lately too. A friend of mine got me into that. She really helps run a network in Philadelphia, which is like not any network I'm ever going to be part of. But she's like, oh, just check out this mesh thing. It's really cool.
Yeah.
So wait. What's your definition of vintage here, Sarah? How old are your tech t-shirts you're talking about?
No, it was for the Vintage Computer Festival.
Oh, okay.
It was the festival for vintage computers. My t-shirts are not that old. They're only a few.
Well, I'm wearing. You can't even see it in the frame here, but I've got my 2024 PHP tech t-shirt on right now.
That's not
and vintage. Like that is not vintage, but it's also like the oldest t-shirt I have at this point. All my old ones are just wearing out. So, you know, that's not really vintage, but I was curious to see what you had.
Yeah.
I remember back when Sean and I were working with PHP Architect, we had an idea to ship all of the code samples for a magazine out on a floppy with the magazine. And then we realized we actually didn't need to put the code samples on the disks. We could just ship blank disks to everybody, which would be both easier and cheaper, and then just claim it got corrupted in the mail.
Offer to send somebody some files. Because who's got to drive anyway?
Right?
Went through x-rays for sure.
Yeah.
An idea that we did not follow through with, tragically.
I vaguely remember discussing that idea, and it sounded like logistically like a real pain in the butt. But yeah, just slap a label on it. Maybe even throw just a degausser on it just to scramble the bits a little bit so it doesn't just look like an empty disk, because that would be sus.
Like when you edit the Word file to make it corrupted before you send it into your teacher, so that it doesn't open, and then they reply. By the time they reply back asking for the good file, you've had a chance to finish writing your report.
You don't even have to do that. What? You can just send the wrong file.
Oh, no. Oh, no. My dog ate my upload. Oh, no.
Yeah, my partner is a teacher, and she regularly gets the wrong file that is due right now. And oops, I sent the wrong file. I guess I'll have to send you the real one when I'm back at my computer tomorrow kind of situation.
See, I was entertaining this notion as if it was a ridiculous
it's real.
Thing for somebody to try, but apparently it's just what students do. Apparently students ask AI to write their papers and then don't even read what the AI has written, which is fantastic.
I have coworkers who do the same thing, so I don't see the problem here. No. at least stakes are lower with homework papers.
I mean, who doesn't do that when you bring a package from someone else anyway, though, right? Like, do you audit all your...
Nobody is checking their packages before they...
I'm not here to pimp AI in any sort of way, but, like, don't pretend that someone's vibe code is really different from you NPM importing something.
Okay. I'm going to defend that a little bit.
I didn't want to turn this into an AI thing for sure.
On the basis that if you're using a very large package, presumably a bunch of eyes are... Well, a bunch of hands are using it. And some fraction of those have eyes attached that have looked at the code. And it said, this isn't obviously malicious. Whereas with AI, the only eyes that have looked at it are, you know, not eyes.
Yeah. You're not wrong, except for that's not really how it always works.
I know.
Okay.
I've got rose-colored glasses on.
We have a lot of developers here, and I needed some expertise on something I did last week. I shipped 250,000 lines of code last week, bypassing my teammates and other things like that. Sarah's about to explode. Oh my God. So, in fairness, this was not new code. This was a amalgamation with SQLite code, primarily mixed with some other code. So what I did basically was to check in that amalgamation so I don't have to recompile it every time. And I added it as a static file as a dependency rather than being generated each time. but it's 250,000 lines of code. Like there's, and I got feedback of, why didn't you post that as a pull request? What were you going to do if I posted this as a pull request? You cannot tell me in any reasonable context that you can review that, modify it, do anything meaningful with it besides let an AI scan it, which is what we did anyways. On top of which, it's C code, and I'm pretty good with C. If I wanted to hide something malicious in C code, I could do that. I feel pretty confident I could do that.
Especially in a quarter million line PR.
Exactly. Like I, right. And there's no way to break that apart. It's 250,000 lines of one file. So
all
like
parameterized defines are completely legit. Like, and the fact that they're all one letter is not sus at all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like, how would you have handled that if you needed, if you wanted to do something like that in your organization, how would you have handled something like that?
Who are you asking?
You know, I'm asking anybody. I'm open to anybody's feedback, because how do you handle when like that does not go through a PR process? That cannot.
So it was automatically generated beforehand, and you've just taken that generation and put it into the Git repo itself?
Right. So basically we're checking it in so that we have a pinned version and not generating this amalgamation file.
Yeah, I would probably do something like that. I think I would ship like the compiled version as a separate package than what.
And that's exactly what I did, is I created a separate package, set up the CI for it, and plopped it there.
Yeah. I mean, like I make pretty good use of the Amazon APIs on a regular daily basis for work stuff, and those are 100% generated. Like they have some XML definitions, and all the toolkits, even Amazon's, are generated code. So we use that stuff all the time. Like, a hill to die on.
When it's generated code that's like generated from, you know, a bespoke written, you know, script that generates it, that's not the same as like a 250,000 line diff from an AI. That's a very different animal.
Oh, from an AI.
You would say, like, this is the change to the generation process. This is what you need to review. Mm-hmm. That is just the output. You can sanity check it at a glance, but.
Yeah.
I would have included in the PR the command to generate the exact same code.
Oh, yeah.
So that somebody could like actually see both versions, so that you didn't in, you know, line 127,642 be like, R minus RF.
Well, ideally your generated stuff should be generated as part of the build process. You're not even checking the artifacts in.
You know, that is
if you want to take that, go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's dangerous. That is actually something that breaks all the time for me, because, they put out an update and they followed SemVer, except for they didn't. And we had this problem with this is a different package. We had it just recently.
People are terrible at SemVer.
I am sympathetic, because I have maintained libraries and I have done exactly that. I'm like, this is not a symbol that I knew I was even being exposed. I can modify it. Nope, that broke. The other problem was in a Kotlin project we were working on. The constructor, they added another parameter, and the added parameter had a default value. So it would still be, it's still three parameters long. Well, that's great, but it'll compile with the new one, but the runtime won't line up.
I thought you were talking PHP at this point. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. That was in a different language, but, it's the same kind of thing where like, it's followed SemVer, except for it didn't, and it broke everything. Mm-hmm. And you had a nice mess from that.
Yeah. So I generally take that stuff even a step further and prefer to use NixOS for my operating system packages. And those have reproducible builds entirely. Like I can hash the output of those, and they're the same as what the package maintainer intended. Yeah. So that's fun.
I know Nix has got reproducible builds. Fedora's still working on that, right?
I don't know what the deal is with Fedora.
I deployed really code hard last week with SCP-R. Worked great.
Completely valid life choice.
True story. Like you know, not for the main website. But yeah.
I knew people who would update production code by using a multi SSH thing. I forget what it was called, but you would pretend like you're SSHing to one machine, and you would just kind of trust that they all reacted the same as it sent the commands to everything.
The company that I worked for after PHP Architect, that had very popular websites that lots of people went to, the way we deployed code when I was there was we SCP'd them to a server, and then the hosting company would take care of syncing it between servers and refused to explain to me how that worked and were confused that I was asking. And if we wanted to test something, rather than SSHing to the, or like SCPing to the main server, we could SCP to like www-25 and upload the code we had there and then just change the URL to that and then see it in prod. This was a few years ago, but it was great.
I'm covering my mouth in horror for the appropriate reasons,
yeah,
but also a little bit in shame because it was a little bit like that at Yahoo when I was
well, there. And one of us at least here is able to speak about maybe distributing production builds or production code with BitTorrent, I believe.
Are you?
Were they not still doing that when you were there?
I'm
sure Facebook was doing it at some point. They were using
BitTorrent. Oh, they might have been. I was not part of that.
Okay. In the hip hop before it became hack era, I think that was one of their how they were distributing code around.
Yeah, they weren't like public torrents or anything, but that was their machinery. I mean,
torrents is a perfectly valid distribution mechanism.
At that scale,
and
for sure.
If you've got a big binary, and in the hip hop era, that would have been a huge ass binary. I would probably agree with that choice. Not something I ever thought about, though.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite things about being in the mobile space is I have just blinders to some of this. I used to, like, we used to deploy to, like, the VPSs where you'd have the Apache config with HT access files everywhere. And, like, there was one case I had a FreeBSD server that we'd SSH into, upload the files, and that was it for our deployment on this shared host. And I have since, like, if it's not Docker or some sort of managed environment, like, I don't do it myself anymore, and I have largely gone blind to all of these cringy things, and I'm thankful some of you are handling that not me.
But now in the mobile space, you get to wait, see, you know, upload all your code and see how long it's going to spend in review, and maybe it's hours, and maybe it's days, and maybe it's weeks.
I am currently partially in the mobile space. One of the things I'm working on, I was working on something for someone on this call earlier this year. A thing that's really different about working in that space is you don't have to worry about distribution the same way, but you do have to worry about what your clients look like. Like, you might have a client that's 8 years old, like trying to use an old API that has not updated because someone hasn't dusted off that old iPad in a long time. So there's a lot of really interesting architectural decisions to make about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, how active are they?
I won't name the company I work for right now, but we build SDKs. So we ship the SDK, hosting other apps incorporate our SDK into their product, and then they ship it. So first off, they might have that same problem where their phone, you know, they might have a user that has not updated their phone in 5 years. And we still might have other people who are shipping old versions of our SDK because they refuse to update. Not calling out any names for that one, but that's been a pain point lately. They called into support. They called into our tech support for our company and they said, hey, we're having a problem. We think it's your SDK. And they told us the problem. I said, no, I don't think that's it. It's been going back and forth for a while. Finally got escalated. That engineering got involved. I jumped onto a call with them and said, okay, here's what we can do. I can walk you through the process of this is not our problem. And they say, okay, I agree with everything you just said, but I still think it's your problem. I said, okay, well, even if that was the case, the fix would come out in an update. You are using a release of ours from 3 years ago, and it is time for you to update. We have discontinued support for this version. We're helping you still as a courtesy, as a kindness, but we kind of need you to update because if there was a bug fix, if you found this real bug and, you know, we put out a fix for it, it's going to be the latest version. We're not fixing the 3-year-old version. I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. How do you want to receive this bug fix? Yes. So did they do that? Did they suck it up and inch forward?
As of the last I've heard, they are still sitting there and they're just kind of dealing with the intermittent symptom, which I still insist is not our problem. And like it's every developer's, it works on my machine. And I don't want to sound like that, but also it works on my machine. So
it works on latest is where it works. Yeah.
Well, they came to me with, they can't reproduce the problem, a symptom that doesn't match anything we touch, and I can trace through the code. It's like 5 lines of code it touches before the thing goes out over the wire. And they're like, well, we think the value is being changed. I'm like, here's 5 lines of code to say it's not. So I don't know what you want.
Yeah. Well, it was a good opportunity for you to score some points there, but the client was not willing to meet you in the match. But you know who is willing to meet you is our sponsor this week, PHP Score.
Thank you to our partners at phpscore.com. Every app builds up technical debt over time. It's the price we pay for shipping new features and moving fast. When we build up too much of it, though, it can start to impact how we work. Team velocity suffers, bugs become more frequent and take longer to fix, and everyone starts to get a little frustrated. The key to managing debt is to measure it. A credit score can help you understand how well you're managing your financial debt, and now there's a credit score for your technical debt. Go to phpscore.com to get a free technical debt score and monitoring for all of your PHP applications today.
Honestly, the partner looks interesting.
And once again, a flawless segue, right?
Yeah. You know, I
picked the wrong word there. I feel like I was channeling Linus, and that was the wrong vibe I was going for. Sorry.
Yep.
Oh, I have a cat.
You have a cat. Cats are great. I can't see the cat. The cat is too dark.
Cat oh, is the color cat. Of dust and very
vocal. Also the color of your chair.
Or yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Anyway, want to get us into some topics. We can jump anywhere into this plan that we have. I know you, Paul, were interested in, Jesus, what were we going to talk about? Why are people still using something is what you said it was, right? I should have been ready for this. Oh, well, we're not going to do that then. So I want to ask you guys, because, you know, Paul, you said you're not allowed to touch code anymore, and that's fine.
I mean, I do.
Overloads won't let us
do it anymore. The conversation was maybe I shouldn't touch code anymore, but I still get to write code occasionally. The problem is I'm not good at React, and so that limits the scope of what I can touch on our website.
But you touch the PHP, right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So you're obviously deployed 8.6 by now, right?
I don't think we're on 8.6. We're on 8 something.
That was a true question. 8.6 is the one that's currently in development.
Okay. Yeah. See, I did not, you know, we were on 5 for longer than people. And I mean, I think I've got some moderately popular tweets on Mastodon, whatever they're called over there, about like, you know, the reason that businesses make decisions is to make money. And, you know, if Debian was backporting fixes for a long time, we stayed, you know, we were not up to date. We were on 7 longer than there should be. And it's fine. Like
but
we're more up to date now.
For compute though, because 7 will run on half as many servers.
I mean, I have a dedicated server it's running on. I'm not paying per CPU cycle, and all of this has to be cheaper.
So you have a dedicated server?
No. I mean, we have 300 servers.
Okay, so what if you could run on 150?
That won't solve that problem. We have 300 servers.
That's not
because
why
we're
300 servers. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're like distributed. Sorry.
Yeah.
I forgot what your business was.
WonderProxy helps you test your website from around the world. Are your GDPR banners loading correctly? Other suave statements here about how useful WonderProxy is if your website does different stuff around the world. Yeah.
Oh, my GDPR banners are loading.
Great. Well, if you want to test with WonderProxy that they don't load in America so you don't see them anymore, you could do that.
How do we get more people to test? Because I'm really tired from America to get those. And the CC, what is it called? The California one?
Yeah.
That banner, I'm really sick of it. I live in Wisconsin. I'm not in either of those. And I really don't want to see any of those. Somehow they still keep popping up.
I think there's a browser plugin that'll make them go away. But it's
cheaper
than
the
show to everybody.
Get more people to test with WonderProxy and prove
that there's
plenty of them there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I think people should test with WonderProxy, but that's not the problem. The problem is that when you ask a lawyer if you need to do this, they will say, sure, yeah, you should definitely do that. That's the easiest answer for everyone. So,
and is there a business justification to do so? Or do people just not care if the users connect to their website? I don't wish to say anything bad about Portugal, but I don't think they have any web devs in this country.
I mean, you're on a boat right now. So when you come back, you count?
I'm actually not in the same country anymore right now. So I shouldn't disparage Spain. Although I could talk about the bus service I took here because that website doesn't work either, and that's a Spanish website.
A problem I do see is like American companies launch like they throw some like GDPR banner plugin on their website or those kinds of things, and then cool, the problem's fixed, and now that banner conflicts with their checkout, and they don't understand why they're losing sales. Like something went weird. Like they just like threw, you know, especially people who have like a prepackaged website on Shopify, WordPress, whatever, and they just like keep hammering more plugins onto it. And then they don't see those things happen. And now they're sad because they don't have as many sales.
And some
Sarah cut out for me. Sarah. Is that true for us? So say we all.
So thank you for opening the door to one of my common rants that I've been using for the last 10 or 15 years.
Go right ahead. We don't have Sarah to stop us right now. So Sean, go ahead and rant.
It is that people measure wrong. People are constantly measuring these things wrong all the time. And no one measures things that don't make them look good if they can get away with not doing it. So people put a banner, people put a banner on their website and they don't measure that it makes people enraged and leave. But they measure, they put one of those spinny wheels on and they think that that's driven 1% more sales. And they're all throwing a little party in their little wing of marketing to celebrate their 1% in sales gain, but no one measures how many people find that wheel really obnoxious and leave immediately. And because if you did measure that and you would find out that people did leave immediately, you don't want to report that up the chain. You don't want to say we did a thing that made people leave. So people just don't measure it. And there's an epidemic of measuring wrong across the entire web. And I think that's a big part of why we're here.
They measure for whatever the incentives are built around.
Yep.
As you basically just said, like, to rephrase it though.
Yep. Not only that though, but it's more that people don't measure things that make them look bad, right? Like,
yeah,
like intentionally so, because why would you,
there's no incentive in making someone, yourself look bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I've been raging. My rage is about this and it has been for a very long time.
I feel like we're all channeling Eric right now with our yelling at clouds with our fist or yelling at that cloud with our fist. As it gives me, I know that joke was right there. Sorry. Anyway, so yes, use WonderProxy and make sure your GDPR banners are displaying correctly and behaving correctly, and have your integration tests actually checking your entire checkout flow. But I have a question. What California banner is this? Because I haven't seen this yet, and I feel embarrassed because I should know everything about what goes on in California.
So, I mean, a number of years ago, they just added a requirement. I don't know the exact law on this, and I apologize. My sister's a lawyer. She would actually be embarrassed that I don't know this, although actually she does family law, so maybe she wouldn't care. I don't know. Anyway, so she... So anyways, the California passed some sort of law of consumer protection, something or other, and it had similar requirements kind of to the GDPR, where basically the initial response from all the websites was just to present a banner. Okay. And anybody who hasn't updated their website in 5 years still is probably showing that same banner, which is kind of my annoyance with this. It's not just that they are showing this banner, but it was never a requirement to show the banner, and the sites
neither
that
are was still the GDPR one.
Well, the GDPR is different, but the California one was the sites that are still showing it in 2026 haven't updated their website in 6 years or haven't put any major effort into it. So those are already bad websites that are unmaintained or not getting proper updates, not doing security tooling, whatever. And
is so this the sort of banner that says Prop 65 warning, the site website is known to the state of California to cause enragement and cancer?
That's a good one. I could see that. That's not what I see most of the time. But no, actually, I haven't seen one of the I'm going to look up. I have to look up what this is called. It's like a CCPD.
The thing with the California rules is that people just put on the GDPR one because it will cover that stuff anyway. So like this is why it's everywhere. It's just because it's easy to click on the WordPress plugin or to tell Shopify to do it or whatever it is that you're deploying. Like the way that you cover yourself is you just do all the bad things. And like if everyone's doing all the bad things, then it's not like you're going to shop somewhere else.
We're still going to do all the bad things, but we're going to tell you we're doing bad things.
I mean, like that's...
And you're not going to care.
The cookie banner stores your cookie preference in a cookie. Like, of course you're still going to do the things.
We don't care. We don't have to. For the web company.
About, you know, talking about websites that have been updated in a few years, is I think it's pretty cool how fundamentally the way you could create a website in PHP or like create a company or a product, when I started in 2004 or something, you can still do today. Like, the LAMP stack still works great. You know, there's newer releases of PHP, there's newer releases of MySQL, newer releases of Apache, newer releases of Linux. But like that exact stack and like everything still just works. And honestly, having, you know, like I did Ruby at Stripe, I've done other languages, other places. It's the way PHP does it still just makes a lot of sense to me. And I think that's kind of cool that it's been so long and the same thing still works. And, you know, you need to be a little, you know, Register Globals isn't there for you anymore. You know, all of that, all of those really fun things don't quite work the same, but you can still make a productive website in mostly the same way. And frankly, if you did it that way, it would be a better website than most of the junk that's out there today. Yeah, I clicked on a button and now I see a scroll bar and now I see a spinner and now I've been redirected and now I see another spinner. And then it's 6 seconds and then some stuff shows up and then it redirects me again. Bad. You should feel bad.
Yes. And it's because you've got a gigabyte of JavaScript loaded on your homepage as well. Yeah.
Well, and people's targets for the wait page loads are like 7 seconds now instead of like
how
when you
work at
Yahoo,
that?
your goal to first byte was 100 milliseconds, I imagine.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
Yeah. Yeah. It was exactly that. It was 100 milliseconds.
Yeah.
That was our
goal. We deliver almost all of our pages within 30 milliseconds right now. And when we don't, it's because Stripe takes too long to answer us or one of the other APIs that we use. Like we don't do a lot of browser stuff. And the thing I didn't mention earlier is I'm working on a startup called StudioWorks, which is business management tools for creative studios and small businesses. So we have an invoicing product and we have a proposals product coming. But we don't do a lot of browser side stuff. Like we do some things on the browser when it makes sense, like when it makes sense to validate some of the other inputs on the page or those sorts of things. But almost all of our stuff is server round trips, but they take like less than 100 milliseconds, almost always less than 50 milliseconds. And so they don't seem slow. But people are like, oh, this is like, we did see some resistance of people who are like, oh, the browser page changed when I clicked this button. And like, yeah, but then it came back real fast. like you don't, that's fine. Like, it was the good thing that this happened.
If your expectation is that a new page load is 7 seconds, I can understand.
Right. Being afraid to click anything.
Yeah.
Are you using anything like Livewire for swapping out components or anything like that?
We're not. We don't do much for component stuff. We do like regular web component, like regular HTML web component stuff, but I don't do most of that myself. I don't do much of the front end stuff. All of our stuff is in, the StudioWorks stuff is all in Swift. So we build server-side Swift, and it is a wonderful, beautiful, fast language.
You're my favorite person now for that. I love Vapor. I've been using Vapor for a couple small projects when I can, when PHP doesn't work. Vapor is my favorite. Like iOS is my primary platform I work on. So like having that available at first, I'm like, I struggled through it a lot until it grew and matured a little bit. And now we've got an ecosystem there that's growing. There is no one, I didn't know anybody using it in production. So thank you for...
I believe that we have the biggest HTML app on Hummingbird. I don't know that for sure, but most people are using Hummingbird for API stuff, mostly to talk to their iOS ecosystem apps. So like they'll build an API in Hummingbird and sort of JavaScript or whatever, or JSON or whatever, but we have an actual HTML app, and I think we have the biggest one. I don't know that for sure, but I haven't encountered another bigger one.
I'm at risk of turning this into a Swift architect podcast right now. But
I was amazed to hear that Swift is used as a server-side language. I had no idea that was even.
It's a general purpose language. You can use it for embedded programming now.
Most languages are Turing complete at the end of the day. They can do whatever they want to do.
Not just Turing complete. Apple at WWDC last week, Monday, announced that they have Swift in their kernel now for their OS. That is incredible that they can use it in that kind of environment.
The container
that
stuff,
doesn't
like the
surprise
Apple
me
native.
Based on conversations I have had with people at food companies, yes.
All of the container stuff that Apple does now, if you were paying attention to WWDC, you probably saw some container stuff last year and this year. But like, it's their answer to Docker. It's like real native, like fast running Apple platform stuff, and that's all Swift managed. Like the kernel launching stuff, all the gRPC stuff is Swift. They're using it.
Yeah, I've got some Googling to do. I had no idea Mac OS supported
containers. It's going to be hard. They named it container.
Yeah, it's really annoying.
Dumb.
It's so annoying that they do that.
You know, there are some hard things in computers, and we all know this. There is naming, cache concurrency, and off by one errors. And time zones, actually, we're going to add time zones because I'd messed up Sarah's time zone already a couple times trying to get this planned and coordinated. I don't know how
it's a very special time zone.
How are you to the west of UTC time and somehow on the wrong side of it? I don't understand that, but we'll move on from that.
Because humans are bad and math is hard. Yes, I'm in the Western Hemisphere and I am at UTC plus one, but it's summer, so that's Well, okay, right now I'm a UTC plus two, and that is insane. And I have problems with Spain because of that. Spain should not be in Central European time. I'm sorry.
We mentioned, maybe it was in the pre-show, but we mentioned Newfoundland time zone earlier.
That was pre-show, yeah.
Yeah, so that's an hour and a half.
But I just want to underline the fact that Spain and Poland are in the same time zone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Think about that. That is not right.
Yeah.
There's a Canadian national broadcaster called CBC. And if if you've listened to it at all, this show's going to be on at 6:30 Newfoundland. Like that sort of whole cadence of time blank 30 Newfoundland is I think ingrained into millions of Canadians' heads. It's just like having heard that thousands of times.
As an American 80s kid, the phrase I can utter for you over and over again is catch it at 8:07 Central Mountain. And it would always be in that cadence. And the absolutely insane thing about it is that did not line up with simultaneous broadcasts. That was just like, we're going to throw it at these random times. They don't really have a lot to do with each other. And we're, East Coast and West Coast is going to be the same number on the clock. So they're 3 hours apart. Then Central and Western. Central kind of lines up with the East, but then West is its own, the mountain's its own thing.
I'm a little bit longful for when I was a child, and like we used to hear on Nickelodeon, they'd say like, "Oh, this show's on at 2:01 Central." And being naive as a kid, I thought there are two time zones. There's the other time zone, which I didn't even understand. We heard it's 2:00, and where I'm at, it's 1:00, and that's all I needed to know. Oh, we're at 1:00. We're Central Time. Okay, there are two time zones in the world. Man, is it so much worse than that?
So I love that you're ranting about time zones, because this is another one of my rants.
I would like to introduce you to Indiana and Arizona.
Right. So part of the reason that the broadcasts were so messed up like that is because it was a physical broadcast tower that you would get like in a physical location. And so like the Indiana stuff is like, if they do a lot of commerce with Chicago, they're on Central Time, but otherwise Eastern.
Yeah, so it was Indiana.
I think that's right, right? Yeah. Anyway.
The west side of Indiana has always kind of been central. The east side of Indiana has kind of always been eastern. But then there's been this war in the middle where they keep like counties move back and forth.
Yeah. I don't know how anyone keeps track of that ever. Like,
honestly, does.
I'm curious what's going to happen now that the Bears are moving into Indiana. Like, I really think that's going to be a big swing in that time zone because the Bears have to be in Central Time. That's just how it's going to work. And I think that's going to make a lot. It's not have to. Let me clarify that.
I was going to ask.
There's no like law. There's no, judicial supreme ruling that's going to come down and be like, no, sorry, Bears have to be there. It's going to come
it's
out.
It's actually buried in the Magna Carta, weirdly enough, that the Bears have to be in the U.S. Senate.
It was different time, Bears, but still.
But, the Bears, Green Bay, Cowboys, like they all kind of are rivals. They're all always in the same time zone. They're all always playing together. So all the fans are who coordinate all base it on Central Time. I don't think it's very likely that they're going to shift the time of the games to start being Eastern time. So I'm really curious if this is going to be, just as you said, like that middle feuding area, I think that's going to be changed probably in the next few years as people start to adapt more in Indiana for that. But we'll see how that goes. I'm curious.
Yeah.
I think the software we're using is automatically retargeting Sarah's like frame, and it's gently rocking back and forth. So it seems like the boat is rocking.
Oh, the boat is rocking. I can feel it.
Mm-hmm. I think it's doing extra stuff for us.
We see your background moving. So the camera is staying focused on you, but the background is moving relative to you. So it's really interesting.
Oh. Yeah, you're right. I see it now. Weird. Okay.
This has been 30 seconds in parallax.
Yes. On that bombshell, because it is actually 1 a.m. here, technically speaking, and we are in a marina, and I don't want to be too loud for the neighbors, it might be about time to draw this to a close unless y'all had something you wanted to cover first.
One of the things I added to the show notes is things that have changed in PHP since Sean and I were more majorly involved.
Go ahead.
The biggest, coolest thing, I think, is the creation of the PHP Foundation. I think that some sort of organization that could be in charge of like doing good things for PHP and hiring people to work on PHP has been talked about since before I was doing anything other than editing PHP BB scripts on a server and hoping they didn't crash. And so I'm so excited that it's around now. I'm also one of the many people out there who's giving it some financial support. So far, if your listeners have X dollars a month, they should get on that bandwagon. But I'm super excited that that's around. And I think that it's only going to be good for PHP, that there's someone there that can spend money that isn't just like one of the things that I miss about the earlier eras of PHP is I remember watching like Facebook and Yahoo competing to see who could make APC work the best. Okay, so that's several days ago now. There'd be like some commits from one group and commits from the other, like both groups just sort of, you know, playing ping pong on who could get the best optimizations in there.
It wasn't a competition, it was cooperation.
Sure.
It was joint, you know.
Yeah. And it was great. And like I think that was really cool, but I think that, you know, Facebook's no longer using native PHP or whatever we call it these days, at real PHP. And so like I think a group like the foundation, especially if they can take lots of smaller amounts of money from people and help organize that, I think is really good. And so I'm really excited that's something that exists now.
I'm really proud to be a part of that. I don't put a lot of work into it personally. I think a lot of people do a lot more work to make this thing happen. Roman, certainly. Elizabeth, absolutely. She has been an absolute dynamo lately, keeping the foundation moving forward in the right direction. And because I've just seen Eric has shouted no free ads about you talking about WordProxy, I just want to remind folks that they can give money to the foundation circuitously by signing up for a WordProxy subscription and checking their websites are GDPR compliant and everything's still working correctly. So check out WordProxy.com, I think.
Yeah. Okay. One of my suggestions, I occasionally give people startups advice because I guess I've been not yet unsuccessful, is that if you talk to somebody for 10 minutes about your company and then they leave, they should just be able to get your domain right on the first try.
At the very least, one would hope. Yeah. Yes.
You know, and so we have another thing called like test locally. And, you know, we did the fun thing with like the .ly on the domain, but of course we bought the .com and like other variations so that if you just guess it, it's going to work. And I think that's just good advice for everybody. It's fun seeing, okay. I just pulled up the PHP Foundation website. And it says more than 1,000 individuals support the PHP Foundation. And Rasmus Lerdorf is on that list. Which I just found funny. Like, I feel like Rasmus's support really came, was like foundational, you could say, in terms of the PHP's foundation. I think Rasmus.
It's time Rasmus pulled his own weight. I mean, honestly, you know, sitting around on his laurels, whatever they are.
One of my favorite Rasmus talks from 20 some odd years ago was talking about how, you know, because back in the day people used to worry a lot about hit counters, counting how many people went to your website, and you do that not through JavaScript analytics that get fed to the largest surveillance company on the planet, but you know, just by counting yourself. And you know, he talked about like people build this thing and there's MySQL calls and there's this and there's this and there's this, there's just this huge stack.
Archie, and he's like Apache logs and
or when the file, you could just append a single letter or period to a file, which is an atomic operation, and then the size of the file to how many people have been to your website.
Wow, do I hate that. Wow.
I mean, okay.
This is back when people ran one server, getting back to the other servers thing.
Right, if you had 100
viewers at that
time,
I get it. If there's a second process that is like doing atomic moves, because you can do an atomic move as well.
Log rotation is a well-handled problem on Linux servers. And then you've even got a histogram for how many people came over time.
Nice. I like the callback to measuring wrong. It's good.
If we can, actually, I want to throw a question here to Sean, because I think he's got a good perspective for this. So you mentioned about using Swift on the server and having a little bit of background in that. Swift in Swift 6 added a lot of concurrency. They've got actors, they've got sendables, they've got a lot of different things. PHP, especially the last couple versions, we've been adding a lot of threading to it. What would you like to see in the PHP model for threading? Any of the features that you've used in Swift, or any of those you love, any of those you hate, what would you like to see?
So I really, honestly, am not very familiar with where PHP is now with that stuff, but I will tell you, what's really, 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 really nice about Swift concurrency, which is what that whole system of like making sure your threads don't trample on each other is called in Swift, is that it's managed by the compiler. It's managed at compile time. And so if I make a mistake there, the compiler will say, no, like, I don't have to wait until my production threads trample on each other. The compiler says, you did not properly lock this sendable object and send it off over here. Like, it require we require that. And so I, one of the my favorite things about working in Swift is that the compiler, like, slaps me all the time. And it is wonderful because it, like, I know way before I get anywhere near the dev server, let alone onto production. Like, I know that I've made those mistakes and I just can't ship them. Like, the compiler won't let me. So, like, anything you can do as early as possible for helping people manage what is really, really a very complicated system, I think is really valuable. And it's annoying sometimes when I need to, like, fake a lock. I need to tell it, hey, I'm doing this lock myself. But any early warning system for that stuff, I think, is like 10 times more valuable than finding out about it too late when you have corrupt data. 10,000 times, maybe.
Well, I'll say this about...
Go ahead. I was just going to say, you're not a fan of unchecked sendables?
What's, sorry?
Unchecked sendable, you're not a fan?
Well, sometimes you need unchecked sendables, but I am not a fan of them now. We avoid them most of the time. Not always.
I was just going to say that as far as I know, HHVM's concurrency, which is all async away speak, that's basically cooperative multitasking. It's not really... cooperative task switching, rather, is the right term for that. Which is not really the same thing as you know, multiple threading. So you don't have the locks, but you can still get deadlocked anyway, because if somebody isn't cooperating, they forget to hand off control. That can be very bad.
Yeah. So setup is also like async await for the most part. But the thing I'm talking about with the compiler is that if you require something to be sendable, then the compiler will say you can't actually make this thing writable after it's been sent. So I cannot have a writable property on something that I've made sendable because another thread might trample on it after I've already made assumption about it. And the really beautiful thing is that the compiler tells me that. That's the really fun part.
Go's got something very similar to that. Mm-hmm. I haven't touched it in a while, but I do recall it being kind of designed in that same sort of concept. I think I even called it a send, actually. Yeah. Speaking of poorly named things, let's run Go in a container. Shaking fist, yelling at clouds. Well, as long as we're talking about this topic, then why don't we talk about conferences a little bit? Because I know you two have been involved in the running of a few conferences over the years. Have you been to any PHP stuff lately? I mean, I assume Sean hasn't because you're not doing PHP, but I haven't seen you in ages, Paul. Where have you been, man? I've seen more of your wife than I've seen of you. How is that a thing?
I should have come down to New York in that era more often when my wife was at MongoDB.
Well, I was seldom in New York, so you know.
Yeah, and it was and I don't know. At some point, we had kids, and that made things harder. Travel wise.
I've not been to talk about this.
I've not been to a PHP conference in a while. I'm not currently traveling through the US. If I'm going to go to a conference, I'm going to want go to one that like has a wide range of speakers coming to it. And so I haven't seen any good options. I went to MicroConf, which is a conference people bootstrap their own conference or their own company a couple times. That was really nice. And last year I actually went to a conference called Moticon or Test Bash Brighton, which is all about people on like the QA side of the world, or really they often talk more about quality rather than like testing. And that was a really interesting conference to go to and hear from sort of that whole side of the world, how they think about things a lot. It's coming back. It's like at the very beginning of October this year, up in Brighton. So I'm looking forward. I'm going to that one again. I've been to lots of PHP conferences. You know, I was in there in the era when we talked about how we were hearing the same speakers all the time.
That still happens. It's a different set of the same, but it still happens.
Yeah. But like just this, like I think anyone, like it doesn't matter what language you're in, going and listening to people talk about like testing and quality could be a really interesting opportunity for everybody. This may not go well with the no free sponsor slot thing, but
well, I was going to give a shout out to PHP Tech 2027 just to keep Eric from getting too angry.
Okay,
it is
when is that
website
one?
For it is already up.
Nice.
I don't have the date off the top of my head, but if our producer is on his toes, he will be throwing a URL down at the bottom any minute now. Nice. To let people know
I have a question about conferences, and the problem we had in the era in which Sean and I were very involved is, does the PHP Tech 2026 and 2025 website still exist?
Well, that is a good question.
This is the call out. Now the thing is there.
Eric just gave us phptech.io, which I'm assuming is where PHP Tech 27 is at. So to get to 26, hopefully there will be links along the top or something like, or bottom, you know, past years.
Yeah. Okay. Because that was like an issue in our era.
Host name base. Ooh, look at you. Yeah.
Was that like you couldn't find out who spoke at a conference 2 years ago because they just deleted the whole website and then replaced it with the current stuff?
I'm happy to see that we solved that problem. These sites. I go looking for photos of myself. I'm like, somebody took a photo of me at a conference somewhere. Mm-hmm. I can get a whole timeline. I just got to go look for it. It's out there somewhere.
So, Paul, if you were giving a speech at a conference today, if you're giving a talk at a conference, any language, any topic, what are you giving a talk on?
So, one, I'd love to talk about photography. I could do an intro to photography talk. I like explaining things. That one's a lot of fun. I think I have meaningful advice to give to people about starting your own company and what parts of it suck and which parts of it suck less. A lot of developers have the if you build it, they will come mentality. Mm-hmm. And no, you need to do marketing like badly. And I think that problem has only gotten worse every single year. And I think that honestly, AI is going to make it even worse. Because the amount of effort required to show up and have a website that looks reasonable has just gone down over time. And mm-hmm. and everything is busy. Like, I think I saw a graph showing like how many new apps are getting added to the app store. And the graph went and then it hockey sticked.
Yeah. The long tail of shit got a lot longer.
But it's getting through that noise is hard. And a conversation I had with somebody, I'm in a small like mastermind group, they're called, like people who meet up and talk and give each other advice. Was, you know, if you spend 40 hours on a feature, maybe you should plan on spending 40 hours marketing that feature.
Ooh, like, I like
and
that.
If you think about Hollywood, like they'll spend $100 million making a movie and then $100 million advertising that movie. And they know what they're doing. I mean, they make terrible decisions on not making enough dolls for their cool Star Wars women. But like in theory.
And killing like, Wash at the end of Serenity.
Right.
How dare you.
But like, you know, marketing's hard. I would talk about that.
Spoilers.
I'm not good at it, but yeah.
Sean, what about you? Anything, if you were to give a talk at a conference today, any topic, what would you do?
Yeah, it would be probably on deploying things in a reliable way and making sure that you know what you're deploying and you're not sneaking in supply chain vulnerabilities on production and, you know, have some control over the path from Git to what you're actually seeing in production. Which I think I failed at that for many years, and I think most people do a pretty bad job of that. Containers have helped a little bit because there's some snapshotting of that going on, but I think there's still a lot of production that asks for something at request time or at build time that is pretty dangerous.
That is a good quote, yeah.
We can segue that into what Paul brought up, because I did remember, does anybody use require once or include once anymore was his question. My answer was going to be Composer fixes that for the most part. You do still have to require once the autoload. But a reminder that composer.json will let you fix to exact versions. That's what the Composer lock file is for. You do not need to be making these decisions at runtime and losing the stirpad function, which is very important, or stirlpad module.
Fixing to reference. I don't pretend to know the internals of Composer. We were doing I forget what it was called. There was like a PHP far. We were doing far when I stopped doing PHP pretty much. So Composer wasn't really quite around yet. And
far still exists. It's
yeah, that's how Composer was built on far at the start, right? I don't know if it still is.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. Composer actually is a far package. I forgot that.
Yeah. Anyway, pinning to a specific version is not good enough. It is if you're using a lock file that like hashes things, but versions are usually tags that can be updated on GitHub. So if someone takes over someone's account, they can modify a tag. You really want to pin to a specific hash because that's very, very much more difficult to fake in Git land. And it's a huge pain to maintain.
So
I was protecting against a different change than yours is more robust. Fair point.
Why is anybody using require once or import once after PSR4? What would be actual use for that at this day and age?
So I just ran in our we have a lot of includes, like we have a lot of vendor dependencies. grep-r require once, piped it through word count lines. I got 100. So this is mostly in, you know, like there's something here in doctrine, there's something here in something else, but like it's happening.
Well, I guess within a single packet. Well, no, not even then, because
you can't argue with the data.
So PSR4 is the autoloader, right? Is that right?
Yeah, PSR4 is the autoloader. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think there's still a lot of apps out there that are the thing Paul was describing earlier, where like there are a lot of things that are built on more robust technologies, but there are a lot of things that are a page that has some PHP tags in the middle of it. And like if you're requiring once a template, then like maybe you want to do that. Or your common library of PHP code that you wrote in 2003 and you're still using, like maybe people are still using that. Maybe that's not the best thing to be doing, but PHP can still be used for that stuff as far as I understand, right? So I think there's a lot of really simple PHP as a templating language kind of stuff going on.
I mean, it does sound like you just called Paul's code non-robust, but maybe that's why he shouldn't be doing so much of it anymore.
I think if you're inlining ?, maybe you shouldn't be.
I just, our common.php file is down to 531 lines. So there.
That's probably better than the PHPNet website common.inc. So,
you know,
I see in the chat someone mentioned about the, it sounds like Packagist can manage your tags for you. And I assume that works through a lock file. So you have a version number and it locks with like specific hashes. A lot of people don't distribute the lock file, like they'll rebuild that. I don't know in PHP land, but in other technologies, especially in JavaScript land, they don't actually commit the locks and bad things happen or potentially happen when you do that. So it's good that the package manager handles the locking the pinning for you, the specific hash pinning. But if you're building that pin from a modifiable Git tag, then there's some risk there, especially if someone like takes over a GitHub account or sells it or like lots of bad stuff happens.
Well,
I have
something that you push as a package to Packagist. Like that's something that's going to be included by somebody else. So if you tag that to a specific release, then you're probably creating a problem for what application winds up using it. I feel like composer lock is for like the application level decision making process.
Yeah, I was talking about in the context of like your app uses a bunch of other people's libraries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. It's like you built a website before or something. I don't know why. I don't know.
Couple.
Composer. Other people who you could give money to if you wanted.
Yes. Yes. The foundation doesn't have to be your only girlfriend. Right. You can have others.
We've, it's fine. We reached out to them a number of years ago. WonderProxy had a sort of push to like support more of the projects we were using. And at the time, the best answer for supporting Composer was like just getting a private Packagist account. And so WonderProxy's had one of those completely unused for a number of years now, just as like our way of supporting
them. It's a little backdoor donation, yeah.
Like, well, we don't have anything, but you could sign up for this thing. I'm like, great.
Well, I guess you get to call it a business expense.
Oh, it is.
You probably weren't writing it off. Yeah.
And like the problem is being a Canadian company, all of these American charities do nothing for me from a tax purpose, but it's fine.
Yeah.
We make tens of dollars, so it'll work out.
Well, that might almost feed one of your children for a day. That's fantastic.
My wife makes way more money than me, just so we're clear.
Oh, yeah. She talks about it. She says it all the time. She makes sure everyone knows.
Perfect. I'm glad.
I make it sound like we talk all the time. I barely traded a dozen words with Allison, but
yeah, it's all good.
Did work with it for a while. Yeah. So it did remind me though. You're asking, are people using require once in the PSR4 world? Yeah, PHP.NET is.
Nice.
We don't use Composer on PHP.NET still because we don't use anything because we are framework and. No, library agnostic.
Honestly, was really... So I made a change to PHP.NET last year, I think. I had to like dust off my... like.
You do still write PHP then.
So the pet peeve I was fixing was that... I don't even remember what it was, but there was like... Someone had mentioned a new feature of PHP and I was like, oh, what's that? And I went to PHP.NET/the name of the feature and it didn't show up in the manual. And mm-hmm. I was like, oh man, I put 1,000 hours into making this work. Like, we need to fix this. And so I dusted off. But it was really helpful that there wasn't some weird framework that I had to learn to do that. I could just go in and be like, oh, this is what's happening on this 404 handler. Like, I can just change it.
My daughter's home. I'll be back.
Okay. The shortcut mechanism on PHP.net, if anyone has not seen it, is literally just the error page. I think it's error.php. And there's just a massive associative array. If somebody types this, send them there. Somebody types this, send them there. And it's just that easy.
So that used to...
Except for a couple weird ones, like the null coalesce had to be handled special, but...
That used to come from DocBook forever ago. I don't know if the manual even still has DocBook, but...
God,
yeah, we used to generate that, like, shortcut handling from the XML sources way back.
You know, I'm thinking here, like, you know, Paul has spoke earlier about the value of doing marketing and things like that, and, you know, PHP.net is not doing a lot for the PHP community's marketing image. We might be time that we need to get a designer in there.
So that is one of the things that the foundation is working on doing as a project. We want to get better, like, how do you actually get started with PHP? How do you get a server up and running that you can run things on? What is the actual, like, bootstrap of getting somebody into using PHP, not just like on various different OSs and distros and things like that, but just like also like, you know, here's a pathway into Laravel, or here's a pathway into WordPress, or here's a like if you have a specific tech you want to get into, which that's probably the most contentious part. We do want to make sure that is remains completely egalitarian. The right word for it, I'm not sure. We want to make sure that if somebody has like a legitimate framework that they can be part of that, or if we can't come up with a way to do that fairly, then maybe we just don't do it for anybody and we wind up staying where we are.
Well, I just meant more replacing the, you know, 1999 CSS.
Okay.
And here I was thinking, wow, it looks way more modern than when I worked on it. So I think that's already happened, just maybe not very recently.
Yeah. Number one, I can visualize the 1999 version of the website in my head right now. And it's
a weird shade of purple blue.
It is a weird shade of purple blue with a little yellow pop-up box. Yes. That I was just referencing the other day for the searches. So that's number one. Number two, I think the site is kind of pretty. I like it. We actually, again, the foundation ran a little competition to redesign the downloads page. Just a little test, a little something off to the side. You know, people see it. It's not the whole site. We're just going to do a little test. And I think we came up with a really nice looking downloads page. And people are working on more iterations. There are some samples of what the homepage could look like that look very different than what they are today. So that is in progress. I do agree that the actual CSS, the written CSS, could probably use some love and attention, because I was trying to make a dark mode work on PHP.net. And I actually did have a nice dark mode, except for code highlighting. Highlighting is expecting that you're doing this in a light mode layout, and it looks terrible in dark mode. And there's no way to replace them right now, because highlight string just has a fixed set of colors that it uses. And I wrote the patch for the internals to make that configurable. And I said, why are we doing this internally anyway? There's no, it just calls token get all and just adds colors. So this actually needs to be a PHP code project. And then I lost track of caring about it because it became yak shading. So
I'm having some feels about the PHP.net downloads page not listing the source code unless you check a box.
Oh, is that true? I haven't. When was the last time I looked
at it? And I'm just like what do you mean the downloads page is, where's all the files? It's just telling me to use Debian and apt-get.
Oh, this is not, okay, php.net/downloads doesn't take you to the newly designed page. This is a different page from the newly designed.
And maybe this actually matches most people use PHP now right now. You filled the supplies, Sarah?
It wasn't the downloads page that got redesigned. It was the releases page.
Okay.
That was my bad.
Sure.
The downloads page did get a lot of new information. But the releases page, which is something we introduced with PHP 8, that has a completely new look and feel on it.
Awesome.
So if you go to php.net/releases, or click on the big 8.5 at the top. But the downloads page, it's not styled particularly much, but it does at least have new information on it for, like, as I said, how do you actually get PHP up and running, which kind of became a source of institutional knowledge that was not particularly beginner friendly. So we wanted to get some beginner friendly things in there. And yeah, looking at it, it could probably look a lot better. It looks a bit 1999, doesn't it?
I mean, it looks a little bit just like 1999 plus Bootstrap, but
it's all, I mean, I don't, or somebody shared this with me earlier today. This, like, can I put it in the chat? Do I have the ability to chat here?
I mean, if you're on the PHP Arc Discord, if you put it into the general, channel, that will appear on this
the
chat.
General channel.
Yeah. Okay. That's where all these people are. They're in the general channel.
So see, this link I've just put here is how to, the tagline is components that signal how oversubscribed your funding round is. Like we could vomit those kinds of things all over this page and make it more look like, you know, 2026 AI BS. But I think
I haven't brought this up, but I can imagine exactly what it looks like.
Sure. I mean, you can click on the link. I've put it in the general channel. But
focus.
Like PHP, it does what it says on the tin. I don't know that we need more junk and more visual distractions and all sorts of that kind of stuff.
Personally, I agree with you, but I know how PHP works. I know how to use PHP. I know how to download it. I know I'm already
you
interested
do?
In it. I'm bought into to the hype.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be sold on PHP. Maybe somebody does. I don't know.
Maybe the PHP Foundation can use some of this sweet grant money it's getting to get Daft Punk to do a remix of Harder, Faster, Stronger Technologic, that song.
I think you vastly overestimate our budget. Yes.
To do Smarter, Faster, Built for Tomorrow version of that song. I think it'll work.
I bet they would get back together to make that song for you.
I thought they did they sort of get back together? I thought there was something else.
I thought they broke up. I thought
they broke up, but I thought maybe there was a thing. And the video was like an hour of him walking away. Yeah, it was great.
I mean, it's two guys in a helmet. I think we could fake it with AI.
we could get other guys in a helmet.
It's not like they're singing it live or anything like that. So I think we could just fake it with AI. Like, can we somebody get Gemini on that? Maybe, I don't know.
I hate that is a viable way to actually just workshop ideas. Please, please, please don't boil the earth to make a stupid PHP video.
I won't. I have other places to invest my time.
And on that bombshell, it is still getting late. And we are at 80 minutes now, which is well over a showtime run. And it has been a great conversation. And I love talking to you guys.
Fun.
And I want to talk to you more. And Paul, I know you don't want to go to the U.S. for conferences, but good news. I don't want to go to the U.S. either. So we should meet up. FrostCon is one that Sebastian has been trying to get me to go to. He helps run that. I will look for your test fest in Brighton. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I met up with Paul after that conference in Brighton last year because I was in London for a Swift conference. And I also met up with Derek and MGDM and I saw Andre before. So like maybe we could do an old school PHP meetup there.
That's right. Yeah. We'll find the British equivalent of Denny's and go for the Blue Point special.
Or Shoeless Joe's.
Talk about the old days.
Yeah.
Shoeless Joe's, I think, is still in Chicago. I think they moved down the street, but I think they are.
We really need it as a place with a lobster claw machine. Do they still have those?
It was the lobsters that really. Well, there's the lobster claw machines, but they like. I remember Shoeless Joe's had a lobster tank.
No, it was a claw machine. You could put in like a quarter and use like one of those like the like carnival machines to pick out a lobster, and they would cook
Didn't
it.
Didn't they have both?
Oh, maybe they had both.
Oh, did the lobster claw?
Yeah. That was the thing.
Oh my God, I don't remember seeing this. How did I not see that? That's amazing.
Maybe I just made this up. Maybe this is a thing that we talked about many times and wasn't real, but I think it was real.
All right, chat, you need to come up with this answer before I talk us out.
Maybe we just thought it was such a good idea or such a terrible, but also good
idea. I just remember somebody allegedly stealing a bat that was like part of a railing.
Oh, that almost certainly did happen.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I am definitely not throwing sus at anyone, but I do feel like if anybody would have done it, it was probably Omni. But
I was thinking of somebody who had the roller heel shoes. One of my canonical images of you, Sarah, is you with your arms over people being wheeled through a parking lot.
That definitely happened. I don't know if it was in Chicago, but that definitely happened. I had a pair of Heelys and I freaking loved them. They were the best shoes ever.
Yeah.
What year was
this? I definitely didn't break anything.
What year was this all happening?
2006 or 7, 20 years ago.
Aren't you glad that like we grew up in a world where there were no camera phones of like everything being recorded online?
Derek was there with his DSLR. It's all online.
Yeah, I was going to say, exactly.
Like everyone,
as I was saying earlier, I have a photo album of the past 30 years, and it is going to conferences and people just taking my pictures.
You could certainly find pictures of the Oscar Mayer Wiener cars showing up in the parking lot. Like, things happened.
Oh, I forgot this.
Something I was thinking about with respect to conferences is how, like, so much of my mental model of you, Sarah, and, like, the other people I know from that era is based on seeing you for, like, 4 days, two or three times a year. And so, like, part of one of my questions is, like, oh, I remember this guy at some point was really into like liquid vitamin D, B12 under the tongue to not get a hangover. And so my head canon, that's still how he lives his life. And maybe that
People don't change.
Right. Maybe that's something he tried for a week and has since completely forgotten about. But that's how he was the last time I saw him at a conference. So that's still who he is in my head today.
I mean, I'm pretty sure you still drink 4 alcoholic drinks at a
simultaneously
time through Oz.
Quad core,
I believe. Yes.
I had a poor balancing algorithm or scheduling algorithms. They weren't going down at the same rate.
Yeah. You got to keep the pressure equalized. Yeah.
Oh, Derek's drinking again. But yeah. Good times. You're trying to wrap up.
Oh,
no one's given us
Derek's
a thing.
Norwegian dice drinking game. Yes. The rules are very simple.
No.
You roll some dice, and then whatever comes up, everybody shouts, "Hey!" And
my memory was that Derek was medium annoyed that I had done that to his game, because drinking was really expensive in Norway, and so there's actually a lot more rules. But we were well under the prepaid bar tab, and so I took it on as a single man job to make sure that we caught up, which is not safe. Like, that's not how it acted at a conference in 2026 or in my current age. And so I just changed it into every time we roll the dice and we drink.
Yeah.
And then I just,
and I was with you on those rules. Those were the best rules.
Yeah, and you just keep drinking till Derek's not annoyed at you anymore.
Yeah, that was in Atlanta, and I want to say it was 2008, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe 2010-ish, according to John.
Cool.
Or that might have been about a different question, and I'm not sure. Have we answered the lobster question? No, that's what's important.
I'm really worried that that was just a thing that we thought was funny and we talked about so much that my brain believes that it was real at this point.
I do feel like we would have like brainstormed on this idea.
Yeah.
Like, all right, we got the lobster tank, but how do you get the lobsters? Right. I mean, no. We need like a machine. And what if it's like one of those carnival machines? Wouldn't that be cool?
But like until I was in the middle of saying it, I believed that was true.
Oh, sorry. All right. Even my phone is now telling me that I need to end this podcast because my blood glucose is going low and I'm going
to die. Well, that's a good reason,
don't I?
That is a good reason.
Delicious Vindaloo that has been in front of me for the past hour.
Well, this has been the Swift Architect podcast, and we should call it a night.
Yeah, it was nice
catching
up
with you. Thank you
very much. Sign up for 1 o'clock.
And meeting you, Holly.
Come to Tech 27, phptech.io, and keep up to date on the PHP score. And we will see you on the next episode. I don't know if it will be me. I may be lost in the Atlantic somewhere. Hopefully, Eric not. And John have gotten out of the restraints I placed them in and dug their way out of the basement where I've been holding them for the past year. And they will be ready to see you. And
I thought we agreed we're not letting them out.
I didn't say let them out. I said they dug their way out.
All right.
So this has been PHP Architect Podcast 2026.06.17. Thank you for joining us. I have been Sarah.
I'm Holly.
That's been Holly. That's been Paul. That's been Sean. And behind the scenes, being much slower than Joe, has been producer.
Yeah, we didn't get any of the cool labels and things like that on the screen this time. I think the production value is just so
this
much lower.
This has been PHP Podcast, the official podcast of PHP Architect, the industry's leading tech magazine and publisher focused on PHP and web development. Subscribe today at phparch.com to see what the leaders in the community and industry are talking about.